Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. On this day of Passover, we're going to continue our coverage this morning of yesterday's shootings in Overland Park that left three dead and our community shaken. Today, we'll speak to the Reverend Adam Hamilton of the Church of the Resurrection in Leawood that lost two of its members yesterday, a 14-year-old boy and his grandfather. We'll also speak to a man who's at the center shortly after the shooting. But we begin this morning with a KCUR reporter who worked the story yesterday. That's Laura Ziegler. And Laura, thank you for joining us. I know you've been up all night working the story. Thanks for taking some time.
No problem. Happy to be here, Steve.
Well, breaking news in regards to this story this morning, Laura, the third victim of yesterday's shootings has been identified. Who is that person?
Her name is Terry Lamano, and she was an occupational therapist, Steve, at the Children's Center for the Visually Impaired, which is a very well-respected center for visually impaired children in Kansas City. She was a wife and a mother of two, and that's about the extent of it. The police department, actually, and the sheriff's department, as far as I know, did not release that news. A CCVI did. And a statement accompanying it saying that they were so sorry and expressing their sympathies to the family. The other thing, Steve, that's worth noting is that yesterday the Overland Park Chief of Police, John Douglas, had said that they were probably going to bring the suspect, Glenn Cross,
yes,
to court today for a first hearing. Steve Howe, the district attorney's office, has said just, I guess, within the last half hour or so, I did talk to Christy Bergeron in the office, too, that that they're not going to be doing that.
Yeah.
And they didn't say exactly why. I would assume
more gathering of evidence, maybe the federal government's weighing in here with hate crimes, kind of thing that could be.
I think there's been such an avalanche of information that's come forward from the national and international agencies that organizations that watch kind of hate crimes and reports from all over the world of people making comment on this gun. And it appears that the suspect is somebody that people who are in this business know about or have known about for years. He's described in very explicit terms in terms of his alleged activity regarding some of these hate crimes and hate activities.
And obviously so prominent. I remember just vaguely, you know, his name popping up a few years ago when he ran for, the U.S. Senate in Missouri, I think it was?
He did, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and his name was connected with these crazy TV ads and, you know, that kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, at the end of the day, they were, FCC said that that stations were allowed not to consider him a really legitimate candidate because his campaign really didn't have much of an air of legitimacy about it. Let's put it that way.
So they could remove the ads from the TV screens without being fined at that point, right?
Exactly, because they were very explicitly anti-Semitic, racist ads,
yeah,
in explicit language.
You know, I cover politics for a living. I've been a reporter for a long time, and you know, sometimes you know people like Frazier, Glenn Miller come across your radar screen in this way, and you almost can't believe folks like that are still out there. And of course, I know they are, but you come face to face with this, and it still causes me to step back a step or two here.
Yeah, me too. But I think the interesting thing, and this is kind of what I confronted when I was moving around a little bit yesterday afternoon, the way it all transpired is I just got a call about 1 o'clock that there had been a shooting out at the Jewish Community Center, so I raced out there. Not very many people were out there yet. They had it all taped off as a crime scene, of course, from 115th there, right, just in between Knoll and Metcalf,
right,
or just where the Sprint campus is. Not, you know, just police there, and they said they were directing people to the convention center. Well, I went over to the convention center, and the poor guy who was at the front desk, the valet parking guy, a shooting at the Jewish Community Center? What are you talking about? He had no idea. I didn't know what that was about. So I just went back, and gradually the media people started to congregate there at the entrance to the Jewish Community Center campus. It turned out they said they were going to have a press conference at 5, so this was probably 2 o'clock. I mean, it was just really within an hour after the incident had taken place, the shootings had taken place, and details were just coming out about the fact that there had been a second one over at the Village Shalom.
Yeah.
But you can see from the top there, I don't know if you're familiar with the topography, but there's kind of a hill, and you can look down and to see the parking lot outside the Shirley White Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see the whole conclave of first responders and police, and I don't think it was, you know, it hadn't been very long since the shootings had taken place, which, as we know now, killed one grandfather immediately.
Yeah.
Took a 14-year-old boy to the hospital where he died there.
You know, one thing that might be useful at this point is to sort of walk through the sort of the chain of events yesterday, at least as best as we know them, Laura. Still a lot of confusion, I think, from people I'm talking to as to what transpired yesterday. And perhaps we don't know everything at this point that went down, but we know a lot of it. Walk us through the events as you know them, Laura, beginning at 1 o'clock yesterday. What do we know that happened yesterday?
Well, according to Overland Park Police Chief John Douglas, who briefed reporters, like I say, at 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon, just about after 1 o'clock, a few minutes after 1 o'clock, they got a call that there had been a shooting at the Johnson, at the Jewish Community Center outside the Shirley White Theater, which is behind the center. And they responded to that call and found that, as I said, one gentleman, this grandfather, this doctor was shot, and he was
dead. Dr. William Corcoran, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, mm-hmm. William Corcoran, yeah. Was dead at the scene, and they rushed the 14-year-old boy, his grandson.
Reed Underwood, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, to the hospital where he died there. Not very long after that call, they received a call that there had been a shooting at the Village Shalom Retirement Community.
That's very close by, right?
Very close by. It's a few blocks south on Knoll. Just across 119th Street, I want to say it's about 121st, 122nd mm-hmm. off of Knoll.
Mm-hmm.
There had been a shooting in the parking lot there, and they responded immediately to find that a woman had been shot and killed on that scene. Not very long after that, I want to say within minutes, I believe, probably half an hour, not less than half an hour, they apprehended the suspect in the parking lot of the Valley Park Elementary School, which is just behind Village Shalom.
Hmm.
And yesterday I was sort of moving around trying to find these locations and find people who may have been witnesses or had something to say about it, and it is a maze. It's really hard to get around.
Hmm.
I did find a young boy who had been shopping with his dad for his bar mitzvah suit and heard news of the shooting, and they were terrified because they had just dropped the father's daughter off at the Jewish Community Center for this sing and dance competition that we've heard about that was going on that brought so many children there yesterday.
Yeah.
So they went home, found out that she was okay. Anyway, they came back and they saw many cop cars at the Valley Park Elementary School apprehending this man, the man that we have now seen pictures of, Fraser Glenn Cross, or mm-hmm. Fraser
Glenn Miller, yeah.
As an alias, he goes by both names, actually, being handcuffed and taken away, and he is the one suspect that we know of at this time.
Do we have any sense, I mean, was there a difficult moment there as the authorities swooped in to arrest Fraser Glenn Miller, or did he give up peacefully? Do we have any sense of what that moment was like?
The way, in a very few short words, the chief of police described it is he surrendered without incident. So I'm thinking that there wasn't much trouble.
There wasn't shooting. There wasn't a struggle there. He just seemed to give up the ghost pretty quickly.
That's what it seems to be. I wasn't there. I didn't witness it, but that's what the chief reported. We have seen these reports of him, the suspect in the police car, making a noise that some interpreted to sound like a Heil Hitler.
Yes,
sound.
I was going to ask about that.
I read somewhere else that he was bobbing his head. I don't have independent confirmation of that. I looked at several videos from other TV stations. I didn't actually see it myself, but
mm-hmm.
I saw it reported many places.
Hmm. And do you have any sense, too, Laura, how the authorities were able to find Miller or Cross as quickly as they did? Again, no struggle here, but how did they know this was the guy? Had someone taken down a license plate number, or do you have any feel for that?
My sense is there were a number of witnesses, Steve. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of people saw him. What the young boy said to me, Noah Davis, whose house is across the street from the school where the suspect was apprehended, said, you know, I knew that this had happened. We heard that this had happened at Village Shalom. And what I thought is, how could he have gotten here so quickly? Because it is a few blocks, and as I say, these streets are very windy, and there are, you know, cul-de-sacs, and you go one, you know, you go to the end, and you can't get through. Hmm. He said, how could he have gotten here so quickly? So my sense is that the police knew where they were going. They had the identity of a car, maybe a license plate. It all happened pretty quickly, as far as I can tell.
Well, yeah, you definitely wonder, too. This man is not from this area. He's from Aurora, Missouri, down in the southwest part of the state. I think it's south and west of...
About 30 miles west of Springfield.
Springfield, right. So you're wondering, did he have a plan in place? But again, we're asking questions here that perhaps you can answer, and perhaps authorities are still trying to figure out right at this point.
That's right. Yeah, and all of them, the FBI, the district attorney, the U.S. attorney, chief of police, they're all very quick to say that this is very early in this investigation, and there are many, many outstanding questions. And they're doing everything they can not to jeopardize the investigation.
Yeah. What's your sense today, Laura, as you make phone calls and feel your way through this story? How are people reacting in the Jewish community, from the Jewish Community Center? What's your sense of the response that they've had to this, and the deep sorrow and pain that so many folks are suffering here from today? What's your sense of what folks are saying and feeling today?
Well, you know, I want to tell you what Rabbi Mark Levin told me late last night. He was in Lawrence celebrating his son's birthday, but he is the rabbi at Congregation Beth Torah, which is one of the large synagogues right out there. And I will say, too, that Village Shalom and B'nai Yehuda, mm-hmm. and Beth Torah and Beth Shalom and the Jewish Community Center, this is really the heart of the Jewish community. I mean, the synagogues, most of them have moved out there. Many, many members of the Jewish population have moved out to this part of Overland Park. And I think to have something like this strike at the heart of the community and affect people in such a dramatic way is, of course, without saying, you know, it goes without saying, it's horrific. Having said that, what Rabbi Levin said was this. He said, this is another episode of random violence and hate. And yes, it happens to have struck our people this time, but we've just become used to it. Hmm. I mean, we've become so that it's not extraordinary. And what we want to encourage people to think about, Jewish people, as they celebrate the Passover Seder tonight and tomorrow night, and the rest of the community as they come together to mourn for these victims, these random shootings, and just people all around the country and all around the world who are becoming sick and tired of senseless, random acts of violence where people are killed and lives are snuffed out. It's just, you know, something that we just cannot get used to.
You know, it strikes me as interesting, too, and Jeff Nestle, we're going to bring him into our conversation in just a moment here. He's a father of a 10-year-old who was at the center yesterday and was in lockdown for a period of time in the wake of these shootings. But he mentioned to me last night that it had even crossed his mind over time that, you know, you're dealing with the Jewish Community Center and just maybe something, you know, violent could happen there, given the fact that we're dealing with Jewish people. And it's interesting to me, you heard that throughout the news coverage yesterday, that any number of folks saying, you know, it crossed my mind before that maybe something just might happen. And in 2014, that's an interesting idea to me, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's a sad idea.
A sad idea, very much so. Yeah.
You know, the truth is, if you just look around the world and you look at the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and how intractable that is, every synagogue, I think, in major cities around the country has security people. At my little New Reform Temple, we have security people there for Sunday school. I mean, there's an off-duty policeman there. And on high holy days, when the large crowds come, there are two and three security people there. And we've just sort of, you know, nobody asks why anymore.
Hmm. And even a sense yesterday that at the Jewish Community Center, people responded quickly. They didn't panic. There was a sense that they knew exactly what they were supposed to do. They were ready, my point is, for perhaps something like this occurring one day.
I think so. But, you know, I will say I'm not so sure that's not so different at any school or office building around the country.
Right.
I mean, just look what we've seen in the last few years.
Yeah. Well, Laura Ziegler, you have been just great to take some time on a night in which I know you got very little sleep. You were up all evening reporting for NPR on this story. And thank you so much for taking some time.
You're more than welcome.
Again, that's Laura Ziegler from KCUR News here. I want to bring Jeff Nessel into our conversation now. I just mentioned him. He's a Leawood resident who had just returned to the community center parking lot yesterday after dropping off his 10-year-old son, Elijah, there at the building. He was walking back out to his car when an employee told him to get back inside because there had been a shooting. And Jeff Nessel, thank you for taking some time with us this morning. I sure appreciate it.
My pleasure, Steve.
Well, what happened to you yesterday exactly, Jeff? After you dropped your son off, walk us through what happened to you.
I dropped him off at the, if you know the Jewish Community Center at all, this is the roundabout area. It's in
yes.
the front, close to 150.
I know
meters.
It well, sure.
Okay. So I dropped him off there, and there's a group that works for the autism, group for autism kids that meets on Sundays from 1 to 4. They swim in and do activities, and teenage kids help out. It's a really great great program. Dropped them off in that lobby area where they meet, walked outside of my car, and I was going to drive around to the back to go work out in the gym area. And left my gym bag, my phone, everything in the car. And as I was walking out the door, a guy turned to me and said, "Sir, you have to go back in. There's been gunshots." And I went back in, and I guess there was no one was really quite aware of it yet, because it just occurred. And went back inside, and then someone from the center came walking through the area, that lobby area there, and said, "Everybody into the rehearsal room. This is where they're doing the Superstars rehearsal
yes,
area."
Yes, yes.
And it's an old rehearsal room, and we all went in there, and there was no panic or running or anything like that. It was very calm. And the gentleman said, "Look, there's been a shooting in the parking lot. You're safe in here. We're in lockdown right now. And stay here, and we'll keep you informed."
Well, what went through your mind when you heard there had been a shooting, Jeff? And again, your son's with you there. What did you think at the time?
It's almost surreal, Steve. I mean, that's the only way I can describe it. You hear about these situations occurring, and you hear that. And of course, my son, who's on the spectrum, was completely oblivious to what was going on. I mean, his villains were the guys like in Despicable Me 2 and Private Chance of Meatballs.
Yeah.
You know, Chester V, you know, those are real evil people. He can't comprehend or understand this kind of evil.
He's on the autism spectrum you're talking about, Jeff, because you've been on our show talking about your son, Elijah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so he really wasn't worried. I mean, he just was there. And again, the people there was a little girls dance troupe. They were dancing. People were singing. And it's just a sense of, like, you know, this can't be happening in a way. You know, this is insane. But the fact that I think the shooter was outside the building meant there was probably very little panic inside the building. And I say that because the people from JCC came in, talked to us a couple times while we were in lockdown, kept us informed what was going on. And finally, after about an hour and a half, we were allowed to go.
Did you see or hear anything yourself, Jeff?
No, I didn't. I said, as I walked out, someone said, "Gunshots, you know, there's been gunshots, you have to get back inside," and went there. And again, I can't stress enough the people at the center, how they handled the situation so well. And I did hear one thing you said, I wanted to correct it a little bit, Steve, and that was, I've never had a fear of my son in the Jewish Community Center. He belongs to the camps and such. My wife has expressed a great deal of fear over years. Yeah, about that.
Yeah. And your wife says what to you about that, Jeff? And how what kind of conversation do the two of you have about that?
Well, she's from the area in southern Missouri where there's a lot of these white supremacist groups and stuff down there. And when they had the problem in L.A., the guy drove down from Seattle. Her feeling was, my goodness, this guy drives from Seattle to go to L.A. You know, this is a short distance from the Missouri area where all these loonies, for want of a better word, are located. So she's been concerned about that. And she's talked to me about the fear that she has of that kind of situation occurring. But we're not going to stop going to the center. We're not going to stop sending our son to camp there. I mean, that's the idea of terrorism. You know, one person can cause everybody else to act irrationally. And we're just not going to have that happen with us.
Yeah, yeah. And how does your wife feel about that?
She's on board. She's on board with it. She's on board with it. She obviously is concerned, and we're going to stake for sadness for the families involved in the situation that were that had a tragedy occurred yesterday. But we just again continue forward. When the Newtown shooting took place in Connecticut, she called me and said, "Please, you come to school, pick up Elijah with me." I said, "Sure, of course." And Elijah was completely oblivious to why I was at school with him.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you there? Why is Dad here? He's not usually here to pick me up. And the school had not told anybody. It was up to the parents to talk about it. As we were walking out the door after leaving, there was a policeman standing by the front door as we were walking out. And Elijah said to him, "What's going on here? Why are you here?" And the policeman looked at me and said, "Ask your dad. He'll tell you."
Oh, good for him.
Yeah.
And have you had that conversation with Elijah yet, Jeff?
We tried to explain to him there was a bad man doing something evil out there. And, again, in his DNA, it's not to make us understand that kind of situation occurring. And, to him, the horrible thing is the iPad battery runs low. that to him is a complete tragedy at that point. But so he doesn't understand the situation, which in a way is sometimes a blessing that he doesn't understand these situations, how bad they are.
I'm wondering what your sense is this morning, Jeff, about your friends, your relations inside the Jewish Community Center community itself. How are folks reacting? What do you see happening going forward here?
Well, the people I know are resilient, and they're not going to be, they're going to continue to go. They're continue. They'll go to, they'll go to temple. They'll do their Passover Seder tonight. These are really strong, good people. And the community, and I maybe mentioned to you, I talked to you before, I said, it's the Jewish Community Center, but it's really a community center. And yes, Jewish is part of it, but it's a community. And this is an incredible community with support for Jewish people, Catholics, Protestant, whatever it might be, atheist, whatever your situation is, there is support for you everywhere.
That's a really amazing thing. What a wonderful thing to hear.
Yeah, it's true. It's absolutely true, Steve. It's great here. It's a great community, and we've seen a lot because of our sons with autism. The support we've gotten from the Blue Valley School District, where he goes, and there was a young man who was murdered yesterday, was part of the Blue Valley system. We've seen, just great support for Elijah there, and we see that kind of support for him there. You can understand the greater support for the whole community for people when this kind of tragedy happens.
Yeah. Well, Jeff Nessel, you are so kind to take a few minutes with us after a rough day yesterday, and I sure appreciate it, Jeff.
My pleasure. No problem, Steve.
Again, that's Jeff Nessel from Leawood. He and his son, Elijah, were at the community center yesterday, just shortly after these shootings broke out. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to be joined by the Reverend Adam Hamilton of the Church of the Resurrection in Leawood that lost two of its members yesterday. We also want to take your phone calls. We're wondering, how do you respond to a hate crime? How should this community respond to this? And how did you react yesterday when you heard about these shootings? What went through your minds? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Well, two of the victims Sunday attended the United Methodist Church of the Resurrection in Leawood. They were 14-year-old Reed Underwood and his grandfather, Dr. William Corporone. The Star reported that Reed Underwood was a freshman at Blue Valley High School, where he participated in debate and theater. He was an Eagle Scout who loved to camp and hunt with his grandfather, father, and brother. William Corporone was a doctor in Johnson County, where he and his wife of 49 years moved in 2003 to be closer to their grandchildren. Well, joining me now is the Reverend Adam Hamilton. He's the founding pastor of the Church of the Resurrection. Again, both the folks who died were members of the church. And Reverend, thank you for joining us on what I know is a very, very difficult day.
Yeah, thank you, Steve, for having me on. And it's a really tough day for lots of people.
I can't imagine how the families are doing this morning. Is there anything you can tell us about how they're bearing up against a tragedy like this?
Sure. I stopped by this morning to see them.
Yeah.
And, the hours after a tragedy, your body goes into shock, your mind goes into shock, and you have a capacity to deal with things at a certain level. And then overnight, it becomes a reality. And the next day, the pain becomes greater, I think. But they're holding up. They're resting on a deep faith. They have a very strong faith. They're courageous people, and they have a deep desire to see something good come out of this horrible thing. And at the same time, like any of us, you know, it's just overwhelming. You hope that you'd wake up the next morning and find it was just a bad dream. And that, of course, didn't happen this morning.
You know, see something good come out of something like this. What would you hope? What would you imagine that something like that just might be? What could it be?
Right. Well, it starts with simple things like organ donation. So mm-hmm. there are, I heard this morning, about 50 people who will be helped by the organs that are able to, a tissue that's able to be used. And that's one small blessing, you know. And I learned Reed had already signed on his driver's permit that he wanted to be an organ donor, and that was just the kind of kid that he was.
Yeah.
And so so that starts there. But then you begin looking at, okay, what when something horribly tragic like this happens, there's always an opportunity for something good to follow it, and that includes a growing awareness of hate groups and the kinds of things that that this shooter was involved with. It brings the community together, and so we look to see how do we bring this community together. There'll be a shared worship services between Jewish and Christian communities on Thursday. But also, you know, in what ways does this move people to start asking questions about life and spiritual things? And this is one of the things Reet's mom said to me yesterday is, you know, I hope maybe, you know, one of the good things that would happen out of this is that there would be people who would be asking spiritual questions and would be looking for answers, and that in the midst of that, maybe people's lives would be changed. And I see that all the time. People who come to me and say, you know, I was at a funeral you did for a suicide years ago, or this tragic car accident, and that's when I started going back to church, or that's when I began rethinking and evaluating my life and what my life was about. And so I think there's a variety of ways in which you hope this happens.
Yeah. What can you tell us this morning, Reverend, about Reet Underwood and Dr. Corporone? What kind of people were they? What did you know about them?
Well, you know, our congregation is a large congregation, so getting to spend time individually, large periods of time with individuals is not easy. What I can tell you is they were very involved in the church. Reet was a volunteer in our Kids Corps program on Sunday nights. In fact, his family was coming to church last night had this not obviously happened. And Bill and Melinda are actively involved at our 10:45 service on Sunday morning. They're regulars, and again, people of a deep faith and folks that people loved. I mean, they were surrounded yesterday when I was with the family last night, surrounded by neighbors and friends, and just, you know, a huge outpouring of people saying, you know, these Reet and Bill touched our lives. And I suspect tomorrow when school starts up at Blue Valley High School, again, hundreds and hundreds of young people who looked at Reed and saw him as somebody that touched their lives, and remarkable people.
We're visiting with the Reverend Adam Hamilton of the Church of the Resurrection. You know, Adam, you shared the news of this tragedy yesterday at the beginning of the evening Palm Sunday service. I'm wondering what you said to your congregation at a moment like that.
Well, when I learned of the news about 3:30, and our service started at 5, and I got off the phone and I was fine for a minute, and then I tried talking about it to my wife, and I found I broke down and I started mm-hmm. crying, because I'm, you know, this is one, these are two of our flock, you know, and one is a young person, and you just, and so when I went to start the service, we gave the opening announcements, and I said, I need to share something with you that's really hard, but I want us to stop, and I want us to pray for this family right now, and mm-hmm. I want to, you know, and I need to prepare you for this, because I'm not even sure I can make it through the service right now. In fact, I'd asked our video folks to take the video of the sermon earlier in the day. And I said, you might just have to run this, because I don't know if I can preach tonight. And the sermon in particular, somehow, you know, it spoke to so many dimensions of this, you know, without knowing this was coming. And the congregation, of course, began weeping. And it was just and at the same time, it pulled them together. You know, they felt they knew that this family worshiped in the Sunday evening service. And even those who, we couldn't say the names at the time. The family had said, we don't want the names released yet. But they said, we want you to tell the congregation. And so, you know, it pulled the congregation together. They felt they wanted to be, and we call them stretcher bearers at Church of the Resurrection, people who carry you on the stretcher when you can't walk. And they wanted to be stretcher bearers for this family.
You know, there is death, obviously, by natural causes, and there's death through random acts of evil like this one was, Adam. I mean, does a pastor handle these different types of deaths in different ways?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, the easy deaths and the easy funerals are, you have somebody who's 95 years old and they've lived a good long life, and so you celebrate their life and you celebrate the hope they had. But Friday, when we have the service, you know, there's a whole lot of things that you have to do as a pastor to help people walk through this. And part of it is, of course, celebrating their life well and giving thanks for the 14 years that Reet lived and all the great things that he did and how he touched people and Bill at his 67 years. But part of it is trying to help people make sense of suffering and tragedy in a world like this. And part of it's also, especially with young people, helping them realize the world is, because at this moment you feel like you're almost scared to go out. You know, suddenly somebody your age has been killed and you wonder, is it safe to go anywhere? And as a parent, is it safe to let my kids go anywhere? And so part of what you do is you remind people the world is a safe place, that these are such rare and random acts. And, you know, even after Newtown last year, I prepared our congregation and I said, you know, right now we're all scared, but we need to know, you know, this kind of violence is actually declining, you know, over the last 10 years, but it felt like it was, you know, it was all over.
It doesn't feel that way at all, does
right.
it?
Yeah. So it's, you know, you have this sort of trauma and you want people to know it's going to take a while, but you're going to be able to walk again. You're going to be, you know, it's going to be, the world is a relatively safe place. And then making sense of suffering and evil that happens, why bad things happen to good people. And then finally reminding people of the promise and the hope. And, you know, for this family, the timing was, you know, they chose to have the service on Good Friday. And for Christians, Good Friday is it's the climax of the gospel story. And it's where, you know, God in flesh is tortured to death, you know. And I tell people sometimes, they say, well, you know, how could you believe in God when, you know, something like this happens? And I'm like, well, wait a minute. The Bible story isn't the story of how, if you believe in God, everything's going to go well.
Yeah.
At the center of our story is God who walked among us in flesh and he was crucified. That's not a story of everything going well. It's a story of God walking with us no matter how bad things are, and that the worst thing is never the last thing, and evil doesn't have the final word, and that's the resurrection story.
We're talking again with the Reverend Adam Hamilton from the Church of the Resurrection. I'm wondering, how did you react to the news yesterday of these shootings? How should this community respond to a hate crime? We have a caller here, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. We have a caller here with a question right down that road. Lisa from Kansas City, Missouri, thanks for holding on. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Lisa.
Good morning. My question is, do we think about the people that are doing these hate crimes, as we call them? As far as I'm concerned, all crime is hate. But what's happened to this person to cause them to do these kinds of things? I don't feel like we talk about that. What has caused them? There's also a word, we want to call them terrorists also. There's also another word for terrorists. Isn't that freedom fighters? What are freedom fighters fighting for? There is something that they are fighting for. What does this person feel like that they have to do this to fight for?
Okay, Lisa, I appreciate it. Reverend Hamilton, what do you say to that?
Right. Well, first of all, I think there's some distinctions here between people who are freedom fighters and people who have allowed their minds to be warped by hate. And sometimes those are one and the same, but often they're distinct. And when we look at this person, what little we know, I was on this guy's website earlier this morning. This looks like somebody who focused on hate over a long period of time, which warps your mind. And that's a very different thing than saying I'm fighting for freedom and liberation, that there are people who are oppressing my people and I'm gonna fight for freedom for them. That's on the one side, that's depending on which side of history you're on, that's heroic. And on the other side, it's just distorted and broken. And when I look at this man's website, I don't see somebody who was a freedom fighter who was fighting for liberation, although in his own mind, I'm certain there was some sense of that. But, you know, when you find people who focus over a long period of time on bitterness or resentment or hate, and they fill their mind with the same dialogue they say over and over and over again, you find a very warped personality. And I'm reminded of Solzhenitsyn's comment, you know, that the line between good and evil runs through the heart of, or cuts through the heart of every human being. Mm-hmm. We all have a side that longs to do the right and the good and the selfless. And then there's always some part of us that can give in easily to hate and to evil and to violence. So I do think it's true. There are people who do horrible things. And if you look underneath the surface, you find, in some cases, someone who was abused as a child or someone who was perennially made fun of and picked on, and this, you know, warped their personality in a certain way. In this case, I think it looks like it was somebody who was warped by racism and continually focused on the message of racism.
Yeah, I was really struck, and Dave Helling, my good colleague at the Kansas City Star, he wrote a story in the front page today about Frazier Glenn Miller, and one line of that story noted that when Dave called Frazier Glenn Miller's home down in Aurora, Missouri, a woman answered the phone and didn't really speak, but immediately began to cry. Mm. So, you know, interesting, you know, response from, you know, from that. So,
exactly. Yeah. You know, I think about the, you know, some of the school shootings and the parents afterwards talking about how painful that was, that someone they had created had done this horrible thing. And yet, you know, there it's complicated. Some of these folks who do horrible things, it's complicated. Some, it doesn't seem so complicated. It's just the perennial focus on evil and hate.
Yeah. Email here from Claire, who wrote us at UpToDate@KCUR.org. Claire says, I recently watched the 1997 Spike Lee documentary, Four Little Girls, about the 16th Street church bombings in Birmingham, Alabama, back in 1963. The men who were responsible for this bombing were associated with the KKK. I was devastated to hear about the killings at the Jewish Community Center yesterday and could not help but compare events from 50 years ago all the way to today.
Absolutely. And, you know, I actually mentioned that last night with the family.
Mm-hmm.
And the eulogy sermon that Dr. King preached for three of those four children is I'll be drawing from in the eulogy mm-hmm. this Friday, in which he talked about the moments in life that are so hard. They're just these moments that are horrific. And yet he also talked about the fact that you come out the other side of those and that God has a way of wringing from evil. You know, this idea, if you take, you know, it's almost taking a piece of metal and bending it, if you're strong enough to bend it. And God always has a way of forcing evil to accomplish his purposes. And that's part of what this family's hoping for, is that something good will come from this, that somehow people's lives would be changed. They're, you know, and we see that even in our community, that for a moment, people's hearts are just moved to compassion and empathy and, you know, and we move away from our focus on all of our stupid things that we, you know, think are so important in life. And,
yeah.
But yes, that was another example of a terrible hate crime. And yet that hate crime, and this almost always happens, that hate crime played a pivotal role in the civil rights movement, because a whole nation was moved by the death of these little children in Sunday school. And over and over and over again, you find that out of evil, there's something beautiful that happens. It touches people's hearts in a way that actually ends up defeating evil. So evil looks like it has the upper hand. And then in the end, everything it does, you know, it ends up creating a greater, you know, wellspring of goodness that comes from it.
You know, it's always amazing to me the extent to which we still draw on the writings and the teachings of Martin Luther King Jr. even today, all these years later.
Yeah, he was brilliant, and he had such a way of expressing things in words that you can't help but find them still moving today.
Where else? What else does Scripture say that might be supporting on a day like today, Adam Hamilton? Anything else that really stands out to you as you look over the good works that you look at?
Yeah. Well, I think again, I turn to the resurrection story not just for the part about everlasting life. And just this weekend, I was preaching this. I was preaching on Luke's account of the last hours of Jesus, and you know, on the cross, as he is, he says several things that are the three final statements of Jesus from Luke's gospel while he's on the cross. The first is, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do," which is a very interesting statement about, and it's not excusing behavior; it's choosing to let go of hate.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, I preached that sermon yesterday morning with great conviction.
What an amazing line!
You know, and the fact that he's hanging on the cross, and he's saying this about the people who have nailed him there, the Roman soldiers, and the people who are mocking him. And I preached it with conviction on Sunday morning. I preached it believing it Sunday night with less conviction, because at that moment, my own heart was filled with an anger and hate towards this person who'd done this to these to these people. But what I know is you can't hold on to that hate, because it ends up destroying you in the end. Somehow you've got to be able to, and this is what I've seen in the family so far, is I've not heard a word about hating whoever this person was who did this.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that won't happen. That's a part of grief. But the second thing Jesus said on the cross in Luke's gospel was, he says to the thief on the cross, who says, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom," he says, "today you'll be with me in paradise." And I shared with the congregation, paradise is an old Persian word that was a word that represented the king's gardens.
Mm-hmm.
And they were high-walled gardens with every beautiful thing you could imagine. And then the king invited his friends into the gardens to share them with him. And I said, you know, this is what Jesus is saying paradise is like. I said, picture the most beautiful place you've ever been in the whole world and the most wonderful experiences. And those are just a dim foretaste of what's coming. And then finally he says, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." And I said, in the end, that's what we do with our children and our loved ones. So we commit them to God.
Let's go back to some phone calls here. Judy from Ottawa on the Kansas side. Judy, good morning.
Yes, good morning. I just heard Adam Hamilton say that out of evil, good things can come. Seems to me that out of this evil event, perhaps if we could reconsider the stance that our politicians have taken and a lot of our citizens on gun control. That it would perhaps be a good thing that might come out of this terrible tragedy. That's my comment.
Yeah, Judy, thank you. And to what extent do you deal with some of the politics, the hot-button issue of gun control at a moment like this, Adam Hamilton?
Well, you know, we've talked about this at Church of the Resurrection on a number of occasions. Unfortunately, my experience is that the advocates of gun ownership end up coming back with their own arguments that, well, if somebody had a gun nearby, they could have pulled it out of their back pocket and stopped this guy in his tracks.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And so we end up nowhere on gun control as a country. We end up, you know, after Newtown, you would have thought things would change, and they didn't change. Mm-hmm. And I have very little hope for that happening. And the truth is, I think you have people like this man, and he's going to figure out a way to get guns somehow in some state. And so I think gun controls, I believe in that, you know, in that general line of thinking. But I'm not convinced that that's going to solve the problems that lead to this.
Yeah. And so you aren't going to spend a lot of time talking politics here, it doesn't sound like.
Well, certainly not this, not at the funeral or this Sunday. And really, you know, we've got people from both sides of almost every issue at Church of the Resurrection, and I love that about our church. And so we do talk about these things, but we also talk about them in a way that allows them to, whichever side you're on, at least I'm challenging you to think about the other side, the other view.
There's another Judy here from Overland Park. Judy, welcome to Up to Date. Again, our guest, the Reverend Adam Hamilton. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, Reverend Hamilton.
Hi, Judy.
A quick thank you, a sincere thank you from the Jewish community to Chief Douglas and the Overland Park Police Department. They have had our welfare at heart always. I saw how touched he was by this happening in his community, as we all were, but they did everything that could possibly done. And I want to say also, as a member of the Jewish community, how heartened we have all been by the calls and the emails and the Facebook posts from friends, Jewish and non-Jewish, all over the country and all over the world. It has meant an enormous amount to all of us, and we will tonight.
All right, Judy, thank you for the phone call. I appreciate it.
You know, one of the things that struck me after I got the message, got the news of this, and then heard that this person was, you know, spewing racial hatred, you know, even in the police car, is, you know, one, you know, at least for our community, we've tried to build bridges and have great relationships with the Jewish community. I have many friendships with the rabbis in the community. But I think this led Church of the Resurrection also to, I'm assuming, for our members to feel a connection with the Jewish community, and that this person was trying to commit racial, you know, hate crimes against the Jewish community, and suddenly, but ended up taking two of the lives of our own people, and we felt suddenly what it might be like to be in a place where you're afraid for these kinds of folks who are out there perpetrating these hate crimes.
Yeah. Karen from Kansas City, Missouri. Karen, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to say I was there Saturday evening on a date with both of my sons, and I appreciate all the news coverage, but I think that rather than even mentioning anything about gun control, we should also, besides, of course, forgiveness, I agree, is the number one thing, but we need to talk a little bit about what can we do to change the punishment for these kind of crimes, that people would be afraid to do them a little bit more. I think that should also be number one on the table, because it's out of control.
All right. Karen, I'm glad you called. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You know, Adam, you've been a pastor for a number of years. Do these moments, do they ever get easier for you to handle?
You know, I think you learn how to be a good pastor in those circumstances. But when you get the news like this, I don't think it ever gets easier. You know, I remember the first time we had a child who was killed in the congregation. You know, and that night I laid on my living room floor and just wept, you know, and I didn't do that last night, but I certainly felt that, you know, was moved to weeping again. You don't want it ever to get easier on that side. You want to always have a heart that breaks for people who are walking through pain. And on the other hand, I've been the pastor at Resurrection for 24 years now. And so you've done this enough times that you know a little bit about what's helpful and what's not helpful and have thought carefully about, you know, how do we approach this and bring words of hope into the midst of it.
Mary, welcome to Up to Date. Nice to have you.
Thank you. My comment, I haven't heard your entire program, and I was told that you did mention the third victim.
Yes, we did.
In the first part of the program, but I have not heard anything else about her, like in the last 30 minutes, and I haven't heard anything on TV about her. Everything is about this young man and his grandfather, and I am so sorry that they lost their lives, and one more person died, too, and I saw it happen. I was there,
right.
And she's dead, and I don't want people to forget her.
Yeah, and Mary, that's a wonderful point, and I want you to know we began the show this morning by talking about Terry Lamano. Her name was just released to the media this morning, unlike the other two victims, so we're just beginning to learn a little bit more about Terry Lamano, an occupational therapist with the Children's Center for the Visually Impaired, I think out in Overland Park. A statement is out from that organization, and we will remember Terry Lamano as well. And Reverend Adam Hamilton from the Church of the Resurrection, thank you so much for taking some time with us today.
Steve,
so nice to have you. Today.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It very much. Yeah. I want to go now to Peggy Lowe, KCUR's reporter, who's at a news conference this morning, getting an update on exactly what the latest developments are in these shootings out in Southern Overland Park yesterday. Peggy, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
What's the latest, Peggy?
Well, surprising no one, the Overland Park Police Chief Douglas did confirm that this is a hate crime. And the U.S. attorney also said that this suspect then will be prosecuted under federal law and state law, much like the Oklahoma City bombing suspects were. He and the DA in Johnson County, Steve Howe, have agreed to do both state and federal charges.
Anything else that came out of this news conference this morning, Peggy?
Yeah, the victim that you were just talking about, Terry, is it Milano?
Lamano, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and her maiden name was Hastings. She is a member of St. Peter's Catholic Church, and apparently she went to this nursing facility each and every Sunday to visit her mother. Mm. And, of course, she was killed yesterday during that.
Mm. So hard to hear. Peggy Lowe from KCUR News. We appreciate the update very much, Peggy.
Certainly.
Thanks so much. I want to bring Marvin Schneller into our conversation. He's executive director of the Jewish Community Relations Bureau in Kansas City. Marvin, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve.
I'm wondering a hard question this morning, Marvin. Why are Jews still targeted for hate crimes, even in 2014, you know, in this day and age? What's that all about?
Well, I think a lot of folks wish they knew what the answer to that question is.
Yeah.
I think some folks think it's just a misunderstanding. They don't know enough about it. They want to scapegoat someone. You know, unfortunately, folks like this, they can be equal opportunity haters and hate African-Americans, can hate Hispanics, can hate a lot of people that are different from who they are. We don't know why they hate so much, although many times we learn that they want to blame somebody for things that are unhappy in their lives,
yeah.
Whether it's the immigrants, whatever it may be. But we do see an increase of anti-Semitism really throughout the world, primarily in Europe today. And it's frightening that those things can happen. If people get on the website, they see in France comedians who are doing Heil Hitler-type things that just have caught on, and people believe they're funny and popular, etc. And in reality, they're not, and they can lead to much more terrible things.
You know, you said that you were seeing a rise in this kind of activity. I mean, I'm wondering how common all this is. We've heard about shootings in Los Angeles and Seattle at Jewish community centers back in 1999 and as recently as 2006. How common is this kind of thing?
Well, I do not think it is in our great country very common. I think it's more common in other places that have less of a democratic value system than we have. The hate group activity is not uncommon today, and there are groups throughout Missouri and Kansas. Usually they just like to talk hate, and most people accept that they don't think they'll carry out any violence.
Mm-hmm.
Regrettably, we tragically, for a number of families, now know that that's not the case here in our locale. But typically we like to think that people have free speech, and if they want to do hate talk, they can do hate talk.
Right. Well, what can
it's
the average
person...
Just a final point, Marvin. What can the average person do to show his or her support against such acts today?
I think folks need to not be complacent and speak up. Even if they hear the slightest racist comment, they need to speak up and say that is not true. That's not true about an African-American or all African-Americans. It's not true about one Hispanic or all Hispanics. It's not true about one Jewish person or all Jewish people. I think people could make a huge difference just one-on-one, speaking up when they hear hatred and racism.
Great point. Marvin Schneller is Executive Director of the Jewish Community Relations Bureau, the American Jewish Committee here in Kansas City. Marvin, thank you for taking some time today. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
Tomorrow on our program, actress Connie Stevens joins us to talk about her new role at the New Theater Restaurant's latest production. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, and Cody Newell. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.